from the campus of Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington. You're listening to the G Suite Podcast, where we discuss all things Zag business.
Chloe Brown is a senior manager in the VC group of the software development company Carta. Based out of London, she talks of seizing opportunities as they come and being open to new things.
Hello.
Chloe Brown, what is going on? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. It's been quite a few years, I feel.
Maybe. It's been a while. I know. It's actually been over 10 years or just over. Since undergrad, I know. And then I did my fifth year there. So I guess I have one more year till it's officially 10. But
so you must have been 14 at 15 where you're here. So.
Yep. Yep. I honestly don't know how 10 years has passed, but it has.
You've been telling me, and I'm not in the attire that you're probably used to.
No.
We got sports camp. We got all sorts of kids activities. So it's kind of we're casual.
Yeah. And funny enough, I'm not in London right now, but I am in Spokane and can appreciate the weather that we're in. So I can't imagine you in a suit and bow tie in this weather.
Totally. So you're back in town, taking some vacay, seeing the fam. Is that what we're...
So I would love to say I have time off, but I'm actually working remote. So I'm working London hours in Spokane, but I did take a couple of days off because I have back-to-back weddings. Luckily, both in Spokane, which never really happens these days. But the last weekend was a fellow Zag. So it was basically like a 10-year reunion in Spokane, which was really nice. So of course, went to Jack and Dan's, went to campus. Did all of the classic tried and trues. And then one of my cousin's weddings is this weekend. So I'm able to work remote. Kind of crazy, but it's nice to have that flexibility. So I'll be here for 3.5 weeks. And then I go back and have a week off, week and a half off. I'll be traveling a little bit in Europe. And then
good for you. You're missing the European Championship right now.
I sure am. You know, it's funny. I just wrapped up my last call at work and my team's in London and they're having a watch party in the office. So I'm missing out. But France and Poland are playing.
Right.
Just 0-0, if you're interested. And England's still in it. So that's good.
Yeah, that's awesome. I watched a little bit of Netherlands this morning. Work calls and an important call here this morning. So, Chloe, if I remember, you're from Spokane. You grew up in Spokane. Right?
Yeah, born and raised Spokane native. Yep.
Okay. I'm going back to the archives here. You went to North Central.
So I'm just Shadle. So rival was NC, yes. But a Highlander, yep. So yeah, I grew up here, never really moved away until I was older. But went to a tiny Catholic school, Trinity, if you're familiar, on the north side, and then went to Shadle for high school. Yeah. Then went to Gonzaga. So I wanted to move away actually for college, but then applied to a bunch of different schools, and it was the last day. Remember it distinctly. And my parents, my whole family are huge Zag fans. And they're like, no, you should just go. You can live on campus, have the full experience, even though you're from here. And I ended up committing, and I really was quite hesitant, but then, and all my friends were moving away. But I was pretty hesitant. Went the full first semester and loved it. I was like, I'm never leaving. so happy I ended up staying around for another 5 years before moving away. And it was kind of funny because I did grow up here, but I wasn't really in the Gonzaga neighborhood that often. So moved there, did the whole traditional college experience, Zag games, the whole bit, and thrived. So it's amazing.
Can you say Trinity, a little Catholic school? I think it's pretty fancy now.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I feel like there's been a consolidation of of Catholic schools, and Trinity's kind of one of the destinations now.
It sure is, I know. And yeah, some of my old teachers are still teaching there from elementary school days and super involved. And my family has always been really involved with that school and fundraising, and they still are. So huge Trinity representatives overall, which is nice. Yeah, it's beautiful now.
So growing up in Spokane, come to Gonzaga, major in, wait for it, accounting. And did you do finance as well?
I did, yes, but it didn't start that way, actually. So I was determined that I was going to be a nurse practitioner. So I actually started in nursing, with the end goal being working with Doctors Without Borders to travel. And yeah, I always had like the itch for travel, even when I was younger, and really wanted to help people and something more philanthropic, but started, I wasn't really into it. And in practice, I realized that it wasn't really the path that I wanted to take to get there. So ended up bouncing around and trying different classes. And I had applied to all nursing schools. So I was actually, that's how I made my college decision as well. So Gonzaga has a really good nursing program. But yeah, I didn't really love it. And then I thought I would like marketing. So tried marketing, didn't really love the class. And then took my first accounting class. I think it was actually with Pendergraph. She was an adjunct professor at the time.
Awesome. Yes.
And it just clicked. I was like, this is more of like a riddle. I really liked it. Who knew? Nursing to accounting. And then of course my family was like, oh, that's such a practical degree. Yes, you should do it. And ended up really liking it. And yeah, double majoring in finance as well. And then stayed for my fifth year for a Mac.
Yeah. Was it like a blood thing? Some people were like, oh, I want to be a nurse or a doctor. And then I saw blood for the first time. Was it like that, or was it just the—
Yes, actually very similar story. So I actually changed my major after my cadaver lab experience. So I went and everyone was super excited about it. And I was like, you know, I really should be excited about this. And I think like anatomy, it was really cool to learn. Still very interested in certain things like nutrition. So I'm always like reading up on that. But yeah, I'm actually terrible with blood and gore. So figured, you know, maybe I'll get experience in like the finance accounting field. And then, you know, one day I can help run like fundraising or something like that. So that's kind of like the end, like long-term goal for me still. Just like kind of chipping away at the experience and everything now, but still have that. I think it's just like the Jesuit education in me that I still want to like give back and kind of make it meaningful at the end of the day.
Right. More than a check, right? You know, really have impact in the time you have here. I'm also happy to report that Laura Pendergraft went awesome. She had an adjunct for some time, but she's the CFO at McConkie Auto Group. We went out there probably about a month ago. You've got to see this place, Chloe. It is, they do auctions. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It's out near Way Heights.
I didn't know the name of it, but this sounds familiar.
Yeah, it is. So I think, and of course my numbers won't be accurate, but there were 8 lanes, 2 cars per lane on the auction block. I would say each car was on the block for about a minute. There was in-person bidding and online bidding. And I think between 9 and noon, they sold 1,600 cars. It was a sight to behold.
That's so wild.
And market making and all that. So yeah, it was cool. It was cool. If you
are out there. That's cool to see. Let's see, and also completely different from your day to day. So
totally different. You know, we're making a concerted effort to kind of get a bigger presence in the business community, kind of bridge the gap between Jepson and what's going on, you know, across the river and downtown and stuff like that. So, and it's been fun. You learn a lot. I think it makes us better in the classroom. So that was one of them. I literally just cold emailed Lauren, and she's so awesome and so nice. Like,
yeah.
She's like, yeah, come on out. So anyway, I digress. This is about you.
I loved your class, honestly. I would attribute my changing of majors to her, because she taught it in such an approachable way as well. And I was like, wow, you're so cool. Like, you have a job and you do this on the side. And yeah, I was very impressed with her.
Awesome. Overall.
Yeah.
So you get your Mac, and I believe you were on the audit side. It might be missed, right?
Yep. An auditor through and through.
I don't go there right now. But then you move on. So after college, what dorm did you live in freshman year?
So actually I lived in Marion, but a lot of, I know.
I don't know what that is. I have to Google it.
It was like kind of off campus. And I think it was because I decided on like the last day to commit. But it was a very like outdoors focused, dorm.
My Mission Park.
Yes. Yeah. It's kind of off, but I would say that I actually spent most of my time in Gawler at the time. So we had a big crew there that would take over the common area and kind of moved in essentially with friends. I was in Marion some, but you know, it felt so far away at the time, a whole two blocks.
It is. But it's on the other side of Hamilton. So that's the, wow. It is. So I'm going to guess this was an old convent, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, you are spot on.
Yeah, this is like in what they call Little Rome or Little Vatican, this neighborhood around here. Back, I mean, because you had, I'm going to guess it probably serviced, was Holy Names Academy, was right down the street from that, which was...
That big building, yep.
But it says here you got a pool table, foosball table, air hockey, outdoor park, ping pong. I mean, what more could it
be? I think, yeah, that they compensate with the distance.
For sure.
One activity.
that's a trek to Jepson. Maybe you weren't taking business classes at that point.
Yeah. And I did. I lived there for 1 year, and then I moved to the Sharp House, okay. Which is right by business school. And
yeah. Living the dream there. Yeah.
Yes.
Put on your flip flops and walk into class, kind of deal. So, did you go to Flow? Did you study in Florence?
I did, yeah. So, it was right before I changed my major, though. So, for nursing students, you would do the summer semester or summer term. So, went there. And that was one of my first trips out of the country. Again, I had always had kind of like the zest for travel and was obsessed with the idea. So it was super fun. Did a bunch of travel while I was there. I think it was only like a month and a half, 2 months. But yeah, it was an amazing experience. The campus is so nice. And I saw that I think it's the 60th year anniversary or something like that. Yeah.
So I'm teaching there next spring.
Oh my gosh, that's so amazing.
Yeah, for the listeners, I just didn't sign the cross because God help us all.
I know. With all my international moves, it's always like, until I'm there, it's not even happening.
I'll bring my boy. I think we'll probably split. I don't know. Who knows? A lot of TBDs on things, but I have two. My sons are 5 and 8, so I'm bringing more for a month than or so, or 2 months or something like that. But super excited. And I feel like that when you went, it would have been semester. Oh, you should be just this summer, but it was kind of was Jason Houston there at that point?
I don't believe so. No.
Who was the director? Do you remember? Was it Batter?
It was a woman. I cannot remember her name though. I'm completely blanking. It was a while ago. Professor Ringe was one of the professors.
Yeah.
And
Matt Ringe in religious studies.
Yes, religious studies.
Runner, tall, skinny.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I took my like general courses there. So it was religion and art with Carrera, I believe. Mercedes Carrera.
Yes. Mercedes Carrera.
Yeah.
Is that her first name?
Yeah.
I heard her too back in a lot longer before you were like way back. Yeah.
She was so passionate about art. In Florence, I mean, it was amazing.
And so knowledgeable.
Yeah.
I won't say she's Puerto Rican, married an Italian.
Yeah. No, she did have a fun, like a cool, very cool background, and her passion for the Medici family. I will, every time I hear them, I think of her. So,
100%. Yeah, she taught me. And I took two classes, History of Florence. So when I went, you had to go for the full year. They had a summer program. She taught History of Florence 1 and History of Florence 2. And like every Wednesday, we got to go to a different gallery. Like you would
so cool.
Say Tuesday, I mean, what an experience, right? Like you're learning about stuff, like, oh, there it is. There's a real thing right there.
Yeah.
Of course, in our immaturity, we were hungover on Wednesday mornings, just trying to bust.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a hard balance there, too. There's a lot of fun to be had and a lot of work to be had, so.
You know, I think the current dean is, in my opinion, exceptional on all levels. And I think he understands, his name's Jason Houston, he understands what it's about and really kind of delivers. And he's super connected with the Florence community. Like, he, like, knows the owner of Fiorentina personally. Like, it's... he's kind of a big deal. So it kind of has to kind of marry your job, actually. But being the dean of Florence, his kids are there. His kids are Italian. He's from Oregon. He's kind of from Portland.
Oh, wow. That's so cool. Did he start at Gonzaga before?
You know, so he's a rabid Oregon Duck football fan. He's from Milwaukee, Oregon, which I think is outside of Portland somewhere. I want to say to UO, but I know he taught before he came here. He was teaching at the University of Oklahoma.
I see.
And then the position came up. And his kids are pretty young. I think he didn't say this, but it sounds like his kids are basically Italian. Like they go to Italian school. They've been there for 10 years. You know, it's
just like, that is so cool.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what?
The way to do it.
Okay, so you go to Florida, you get out of town, you go to Flo, you get out of town for a little bit. You come back, get your Mac, you got to get your 150. And then after graduation, where'd you live? Pardon my cough.
Hey, all good. My allergies are terrible here right now. So ended up studying. I think I passed one exam while I was studying for my Mac, and then passed the other few while I was working. I ended up going with Peterson Sullivan. They're now BDO. So they don't even exist on LinkedIn anymore. It's kind of funny. And a few other Gonzaga alums. So Patricia Collins was someone who did the Mac with me. And then she also went over. I'm not sure if you remember her. We were both auditors there. Yeah. And we actually were roommates in Seattle.
Well, we're very reception. I know I don't fraternize with the auditors. It's you and Matt Ho, the only two I talked to. But go on. Continue.
I know there's some rivalry there. So was there for about 2 years and also studied for the CPA, which I still don't know how I did that. And even close to 10 years later, I still have bad nightmares about waking up and not passing it. But so happy I did it when I was younger and had the energy too, because I feel like just as you get older, it just gets busier and busier. So did that, luckily. And then after 2 years, my friends and I always joked when we were in public accounting, we would have partner days and quit days. And I wasn't really looking at the time, but recruiters will always reach out to you on LinkedIn. So I ended up chatting with a couple of recruiters and ended up at BlackRock after my public accounting time. So kind of made the switch to industry, big corporation, after that.
Explain what that is. What is BlackRock?
What was that?
What is BlackRock?
So it's a massive asset manager, the largest, I believe, in the world. Although Blackstone, I think, was approaching. So I'm not sure. I haven't looked lately, but at least one of the top asset managers in the world. Yeah. And yeah.
Is the CEO kind of famous? I'm trying to think here.
Larry Fink. Yes. Yeah. So he's very involved. They're super involved in like policies, especially tax policies. And they're at the forefront of DC and all the changes related to investments and funds and wealth in general, which was quite interesting to see.
Can you share how that happened? Like you get, so you're at the firm, you're a CPA, you're working, and then you kind of get cold calls from headhunters or
something. Yeah, yeah. So the job market, I will say, was amazing at the time. I feel really lucky to have graduated when I did. But yes, had a handful of recruiters just that would reach out. And honestly, LinkedIn wasn't as big as it is now. I feel like people kind of live in LinkedIn at the moment, or maybe just now my generation does. But at the time, I wasn't really frequenting it. And then randomly, I would pull it up. And yeah, I had some really good chats with a recruiter who was recruiting for BlackRock positions. And they were recruiting for their alternative asset hedge fund team, which sounds very cool, but wasn't probably as cool as it sounds. But yeah, so met the team, really, really liked them. It was a big corporation though, so it was quite a slow process. So I kind of was like, I'm not sure if this is going to work out. And I was kind of deciding if I wanted to stay or move on. But then they ended up bringing me onto the team and was there for about 2 years as well. And yeah, mainly focused on really large hedge funds. And it was like larger companies, a lot of like retirement plans, investing in different ways and alternative assets. And the investments were quite interesting. So it was mainly investing in infrastructure. So they would go, the investment team was always traveling the world and would go and like look at energy plants and developing countries. And that's what they would invest in. So it was very alternative, not like the traditional kind of hedge fund, I guess you would think of. But it was pretty cool to see.
And was your role like analyzing investment opportunities, or was it like internal audit, or like what's the...
Yeah, so I was on the, I think my title was like fund accounting analyst or something like that. So we basically oversaw all of the net asset value of the funds. So I think I had like 10 to 15 funds that fell underneath my remit. And so we would work with, we never actually did the accounting. We more were auditing it, making sure that it was correct. And then working with our, you know, investor relation teams and our offshore teams. And it's quite the production for a fund. So it was kind of like we were the project managers for the fund. And then we would make sure that they were in line with GAAP or whatever reporting standard they were using. And all of our funds, I think, were audited by Deloitte at the time. So we'd also facilitate that side of it as well.
Was it, because it's not quite, it's different than from your role in BPO. Like, how are you leveraging, or how do you make the transition? How do you, it's just kind of like drink it from a fire hose, learn as I go kind of thing?
Yep. Yeah, I think I learned best by kind of diving into the deep end. And so I had when I was in public, I saw a lot of different types of businesses. So I was working on 401k plans. I was working in nonprofits and businesses and retail. So it was very broad. So I was able to see like a lot of different business strategies and a lot of different operations, which kind of helped, I think, be a bit more flexible. But yeah, I feel like a lot of corporation and training is tribal knowledge. And so you kind of sit down and mirror your counterparts and then kind of take it from there, and dove into the deep end. And I think in the first week, they're like, read all of the LPAs, which is basically the operating memorandum and like the Bible for your fund, essentially. And that's how I learned, basically diving into the legal terms of hedge funds and alternative assets, which sounds pretty boring. However, it's very interesting and quite complex. So it was a huge learning curve at first, but then once I knew, I've been in funds ever since. I've kind of like changed what type of fund within the space I'm focused on, but it was just that level of like complexity that kept me engaged and entertained. And each fund had its own kind of nuances. So, yeah, it was fun to dive in.
like the mundane details that actually matter.
It was definitely like a crazy learning curve though, just because Peterson Sullivan at the time was very small as well, so it's kind of like you know everyone, and then to dive into, you know, a corporation that is global, thousands of people, very different.
And you leave before another, I'm thinking of Peterson Sullivan, two mergers. There was a Clothier and Head that they bought maybe about the time you were there.
It was right before it. Yep. Yeah. And then they were acquired, like, I think within the same year that I left, or right around that time. Yeah.
So you were out before BDO came.
Yeah. So some of my colleagues still work at BDO or have moved on to some similar firms within the region, but yeah.
It's been interesting. I think when you think of Peterson Sullivan, which is a fantastic firm, but smaller, attracted, I guess it's a smaller unit, right? Where the people that were gravitating towards that for profession weren't looking for a top 10 firm like BDO. And I know when the merger happened, that, or at least the purchase happened, there were some, like, yeah, this is for me, and kind of transitions. But BDO now is, I guess they're not private equity, but they have an ESOP, or they have some sort of unique structure that's not traditional for accounting firms.
Oh, do they? That's interesting.
Yeah, it's been fascinating. And I don't know the details, but it has been explained to me. It's way over my head, but they are running an ESOP. I know that Baker Tilly and Grant Thornton are private equity. Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Huh. A number of smaller firms around that would have been like a Peterson Sullivan size that are getting purchased by private equity.
Interesting. I wonder what their end goal is with that purchase, but...
I think the money's pretty good for the senior partners that are looking to cash.
I'm sure it is. Yeah, like that gives you capital. That's for sure. But that's interesting. I know a couple of consulting firms are like that, and I guess it gives you kind of skin in the game. I work for a startup now, so I have equity and completely believe in equity or that kind of ownership within your company. I think it kind of gives you, yeah, like more ownership in your role and value kind of what you do for the greater company. But I didn't hear that about BDO. And yeah, I actually do a lot of work with them with my company now. We partner with them on various either tax or audit cases. But
it sounds like you're dabbling in quite a bit of tax. At least you have to dabble in some tax here and there. So
you know what's funny is in the US I really didn't at all. And then the second I went international, I quickly realized that U.S. tax is at the forefront of everything, even when you're not living in the States. And so it's a huge topic of conversation globally. And it's kind of the first question that comes up with my clients, like how they're handling tax, if they can admit U.S. partners. Because if you admit U.S. partners, then you're, you know, immediately reporting into the U.S. to some capacity. So the U.S. is always there. And so, yeah. And actually, my company just launched a new product within the last year for K-1s. So we're trying to optimize through our tech platform, which we've built originally just for accounting for venture capital funds. Now we're trying to bridge the gap and optimize K-1s as well, since we kind of have all the data there. So I have had my fair share of tax questions from my clients, and I've been trying to ramp up on that end, which is funny because, again, I really hadn't touched it before I moved internationally. And
in tax monitoring, that's how important these.
I know. Honestly, I need to pull out my old textbooks, I think.
Well, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit here because I want to hear. So you're living in London now. What part of London? Just give me the details before we get to the job stuff. And I want to talk a little about this personal situation that we have going on. but let's start. Where are you living in?
So I'm living near the Arsenal Stadium. So it's North London and Hackney. So northeast. I was kind of looking all over. I really wasn't familiar with London. And I'd only been there, I think, 3 days when I was 19. So I was all the touristy things. Knew I loved the idea of London, but really didn't expect to move here. And my office is in Shoreditch. And so it's super easy commute. Love the neighborhood and all the cute coffee shops and wine bars and all that it has to entail. Love the parks as well. It's an amazing city and highly recommend the neighborhood.
Yeah. And I think John Lennon said New York was the capital of the world. Maybe that's true. But for me, London, other than how expensive it is, but pretty awesome. Pretty incredible with everything that's going on.
It is.
The food could be a little better, but beyond that, I mean, you can find the right food in the right place. But
you can. And I know everyone says not to compare New York or London, but it's hard not to. They're very similar in a lot of ways, but so different in so many others. And I always wanted to move to New York. And actually, I have a funny story about that as well. I was meant to move to New York. And a month before I was moving away from Singapore, I was looking for apartments and my company was sending me there. And I've always wanted to live there. So I was excited, but I wasn't sure if I was quite ready to go back to the US. And they called me, honestly, weeks before. I don't even think it was a month. And they're like, actually, we just purchased a couple of companies in London. Would you actually go to London instead? And so I didn't even know I was moving until a couple weeks before. And then last year, I've been there for a year now.
Okay, so now I need to go back. Okay, so you're in Seattle, and then are you still with the same firm?
So I was at BlackRock, and then I ended up moving to a really small hedge fund for about 6 months. Okay. And I really liked my team, but I realized that I wanted to move internationally still. So at BlackRock, that was kind of the plan. And then a lot had changed and I was kind of ready to move on and try something new. Ended up again through LinkedIn. A recruiter reached out to me for this role, and it was definitely more, it was similar to what I was doing, but I would have, you know, more, I guess, authority and a very small team, had a cool office, and it was enticing, but then started. And my old director at BlackRock had moved over to the startup Carta, which is my current company. And she called me and she's like, I know you just started and I know you just went there, but will you actually come work for me again at Carta? So ended up moving to Carta 6 months later, ended on really good terms with the hedge fund, highly recommend. And one of my good friends works there now, but pivoted there. So I had a 6 month stint there and then went over to Carta, and I've been with Carta for about 5 years now. But that kind of, gives you context there. And I started with them in Seattle as well.
You're in Seattle then still. What's Carta do?
So Carta, they're a very late stage startup and they're 10 plus years old, which is kind of rare. But they are one of like the bigger, I guess, unicorns, and they did hit over a billion valuation. So they're kind of bigger in the startup world, I would say.
So it's we hit a billion. Go ahead.
Exactly. Right. Yes. Good call out. And they originally focused on streamlining and optimizing cap tables. So startups don't always require a 409A valuation, but Carta realized that there were kind of archaic processes within the startup space, even though they're trying to like innovate and they're kind of the cutting edge of tech and optimization, but their back end and back office processes were really archaic. So they streamlined kind of the valuation of the cap table and digitalized your share certificates and things like that that used to be printed out and actually physically stored with your legal team.
Right.
And law firm. Yeah, so they digitalized that whole experience. And then after about 5 years, they realized that they had a lot of data within the venture capital space, and they pivoted to fund administration and fund services. So that's when they started into the venture capital world. And I started with them probably a year and a half to 2 years after they launched that business. And they're a true fintech. So they tried to kind of shake up the fund space, which is also kind of archaic and traditional for venture capital, which is investing into startups. And they created an end-to-end experience. So you have one platform with your GL. So it's all your accounting in one place that is tied to, you know, your capital calls. So that's how you're going to invest. Your actual investments are on the platform as well. So the GP and the manager of the fund can log in and see everything that they need. So their LP's health, their portfolio's health, all the metrics there. And it's all linked to your backend accounting. So my team in London, they're valuing these venture capital funds and working directly with our client base, which are GPs. And then the LPs can also log in. So it's, again, kind of one-stop shop. And they've really just tried to capitalize on the inefficiencies within the market and optimize with a tech solution there, which sounds really, like, I think, it's maybe like nerdy and boring to some people, but it's actually really amazing to see how many inefficient processes have been kind of combined into one, and we can now execute, which is really cool.
And they wanted you to go to Singapore at some point, so.
Yeah, so I started in Seattle and was there for a bit, and then.
And Seattle, the world headquarters, is that where it's based?
They started in San Francisco area, so Silicon Valley. And so was in Seattle. And my director at the time knew that I was always interested in international opportunities. She had worked with me at BlackRock as well. And so she had heard that they were opening an office in Singapore. So she approached me and said, hey, I know you're interested in this. You'd be a good fit. Does this sound interesting to you? And I was like, yes, like never thought that I would move to Asia. Always kind of thought I would move to Europe or New York or something like that. But I was open to it. So started having conversations there. And that was in early 2020. And then I continued having conversations for about 2 years and actually worked remote crazy hours in Singapore supporting Asia until I could actually move over there. And that's why I made that comment earlier. I always just, do the sign of the cross until I'm actually in the country, considering everything that can happen. They expanded in Asia organically. And so I was over there helping train the team on the platform. It was me and my director at the time who started the office. And then we built the team there. And when I left, I think there were 30 people on the team, and they're still expanding, which is really cool. So got them to kind of a stable place and had the opportunity to stay there, but I was kind of ready for something new, which I thought was in New York actually. And ended up being London. So.
And how did that switch come? So they're talking New York, and then basically you get the message opportunity in London, and you're like, okay, I guess I'll do that instead, or what?
Yeah, it's kind of a wild ride. I've kind of become the international global focused person from the US at this point within my company, which is kind of nice. And I think that's the kind of the unique opportunity you do have with a startup. They're very agile and they're dynamic. And so if you want to grow with them, you kind of put in the work and express what direction you want to take your career, you can kind of pave that path for you, which has been amazing. So it was in Singapore, and they knew it was a very open conversation. I had to commit there. I was there for I was on the team for about 2.5 years, but I lived there for just around 2 years. And it was always a conversation as if I would stay or go, which was nice. And then I was meant to move to New York and actually work with my director who had worked at BlackRock with me. She's been a huge mentor and advocate in my career, which has been amazing. And I was going to be on her team, which I was very excited about. But then, yeah, they acquired two companies. So it was two mergers and acquisitions and that whole process within London and Europe. And with that kind of global focus, my experience kind of fit. But it was a completely new experience in that, again, Singapore was very organic and London is a merger. So you have an existing culture, you have legacy clients, you have legacy products. So it's a much bigger fish to fry. Singapore was challenging. I thought that was, you know, some of the most challenging moments in my career, but got to London and it's been amazing, but also at the same time, really challenging just to kind of dive in and go through migrations and, you know, enable the team. I was really only the one person from the US that was there until a couple months ago. And yeah, so it was a big learning curve for myself and the rest of the team in London. They've been great to kind of dive in still, but yeah, it was quite the learning curve.
I bet. So what's the typical day like in London?
That's a good question.
You got bangers and mash for breakfast. I even know adding.
Yes. All the cliches. So,
you know, or like,
start with beans and toast and then end with a Sunday roast every day.
Yeah. And I love the Sunday roast. It is amazing. I fell into, we had arrived on a Sunday.
Ooh.
Back from Seattle. Like, it was like we landed like at 2 p.m.
Mm.
We was hungry and we it's like amazing, but go on. All right.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. Well, if you go back, I have a lot of recommendations for lots of different foods, but I do have an amazing Sunday roast recommendation. It's a little fancy, but it's in East London and it's good. By far the best I've had.
I'm a Chelsea man. I'm more of a West London.
I love West too, but I will say if you haven't spent time in East, there's a bit of a rivalry there. Now I have a bit of, you know, skin in the game as far as an Eastern London person, but I do love it.
Yeah, I see how it is. So, but are you, I mean, is it working on hours? Once I might imagine, just given the nature of what you're doing, you're right. I mean, what's a day like? What are we doing?
Yeah. So it's quite dynamic. And I feel like I use that word a bit too much in my role, especially when I'm like interviewing people at the moment. I always use that word a lot, but there's a lot of different projects going on. So right now we went through a major migration. So a lot of my focus is around building processes. So SOC compliance and process alignment across teams. So I'm leading a lot of projects on that front at the moment. We're also going into the greater integrator Europe. So we have operations in the UK, but we just had our first hire in Luxembourg. So I'm building out a team in Luxembourg currently. So that's a lot of my day. I have a lot of, again, wearing a lot of hats. So I'm also playing a bit of recruiter. So I'm, you know, interviewing a lot of people and giving the Carta story and kind of our vision, because we are growing organically there, which is interesting to kind of sell the vision. But that's very exciting. And then, a lot of it's just my team. So I have about 10 people in London, one in Lux at the moment, and a lot of supporting teams is in addition to that. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, just like team motivation. Mentorship is a lot of my focus too, as well as just enablement. So, it's kind of broad. And then of course we are client facing. So a huge part of my focus is on clients, client satisfaction, client happiness. That's kind of like the core of most conversations. And really how we drive our business decisions as well. So we're kind of, we are still very agile globally. So we're much more established in the US, but we're still very much in the building phase internationally. So every day looks quite different, but at the end of the day, we're still servicing venture capital funds. We help form them. We're figuring out tax problems. We're diving into the weeds of valuations and legal docs. So it's quite broad. I wish I could give you, you know, like I start my day here and end one place, but it looks completely different every day.
There is no typical day, I would imagine. Other than you take the tube to work?
I sure do. Yeah, I take the tube. I also have become a cyclist, so I do cycle, although it's a little scary. And yeah, so it depends on the mode of transportation, depends on the weather. Yeah, whichever's not delayed.
And now I'm going to assume you're now an Arsenal supporter because you live in the neighborhood and you have to. Is that correct? Or what's going on with that?
Honestly, it's only because I'm close to the Arsenal Stadium. I know that true Arsenal fans will probably veto me, but I live very close. I live probably like a 10 or 15 minute walk away, and all of the pubs near me have a bunch of Arsenal gear up, and had a couple friends visiting, also a fellow Zag, actually Emily White, who studied tax. I'm very close with her still, and she came over to visit a couple weeks ago. We went to the Arsenal Stadium, did a whole tour, and then went through the shop. So now I have official gear.
Yes, you're
true. Yeah.
You know, there are quite, and I don't know how many folks that some are a little bit younger than me, but we have quite a few Zags at Deloitte in London right now.
Yeah, you know, I haven't really explored the Zag community in London, but I feel like there must be a lot of Zags. There has to be. So I'll have to get connected with them somehow.
Yeah, and I'm happy to facilitate that. Yeah, it's and it actually might have started about your year. I don't know if Morgan Eliason was the first to go. Jake Perry was there for a while.
Oh yeah, I did know Morgan. I think he was a year ahead.
That's probably about right. Yeah.
Yeah, 2013. I think he graduated. I did know him. Yeah, I haven't spoke to him in years, but yes.
Yeah, but it's been kind of a theater. I mean, I would guess a typical spring, two or three interns, maybe another two or three interns in the summer, and maybe full-time, five or six. So what we need to do, Chloe, is get you lined up. We do a London Trek. And I don't remember Treks when you were younger, when you were at school, when you were young.
Yeah.
You go to like Seattle and Portland and wherever, San Francisco, and visit.
Yes.
So that's, I was there last, not this last March, but March of 23.
Wow. Is that new? Is the London Trek new? I remember doing Portland and Seattle at the time, I think.
Yeah. It's probably next year will be the fourth time they've done it.
That's amazing.
So it's really awesome. I mean, Salesforce, we went to Deloitte. We went to the London School of Economics, with the U.S. Embassy. It's smaller. There might be a dozen, I would guess.
Yeah.
A dozen students that do it. But and they have a big alumni dinner. So we'll get you invited to that.
Yeah. You get me on the list. Happy to join.
Yeah, for sure.
Sounds really fun.
Favorite food over there? What do you like? You like good Indian food? What do you like?
I love a good Indian curry. So probably that. And honestly, that roast that I was telling you about, it's memorable. Very good.
What's the pub it's at? What pub is it?
It's called The Marksman.
The Marksman.
Marksman, yeah. I think it's near London Fields. And they also, on Sundays before earlier in the day, they have a really cool flower market in Columbia Road. So I have a whole day down for you if you want to spend a day in East London.
Yes, we're going to have it because I definitely want to make some London. That place looks awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really
cool. A little rooftop. Am I looking at the right thing? Is there like a little rooftop area?
I think there is. I haven't actually been to the rooftop. I've only been when it's cold out. So I need to go back and explore. Yeah, exactly. Although, you know, what's funny is the day that I flew back to Spokane last week is kind of the first day of summer, it felt. So it was super nice out. I took a quick walk through the park because I just had to experience the sun in London before I left.
Well, my recommendation, it's nowhere near you, but it's the Star Tavern in Belgravia.
Okay.
Dunluck.
Yeah. Star Tavern.
I think they had I don't want to say it was a peat fire, but they were burning something. I mean, it was heated by some kind of wood, some sort of natural substance. And it's one of those where, you know, you sense it's 250 years old when we walk in.
Yeah.
What do you think, Chloe, what have been, because you've done some cool stuff, what have been some of the keys to your success?
Yeah. I think it's hard to pinpoint exactly, but I will say kind of built, first of all, building your network. I would say that building your network and having really good mentors in your career is huge. Because I feel like when I graduated, I really didn't know. I was like, yes, I would love to travel more. I'd love to move around, but I didn't really know how I was going to get there. And I had really good mentors in my field, and my director, who I mentioned at BlackRock, was huge for me. And she was a woman in leadership as well. And so I was really able to empathize with her. She was able to empathize with me, and she saw how hard I worked at my career. So she really took ownership of my career, which was amazing. And I think creating those bonds early on in your career will kind of help pave the path a bit. I also think, I kind of reference this, but work ethic is huge. You know, if you're like willing to put in the time of day and kind of roll up your sleeves, maybe it's not something fun, but it will get you the experience that you need later on in your career. I think that's another huge piece of it. You know, I was always like, whatever task I had, even though if it was kind of felt like it was painful, I would always do the best. I wanted to try the best that I possibly could and ask questions and really understand, you know, what task was at hand. And I think, the final piece is kind of embracing the unknown and diving in to the deep end, because you're not going to know everything all at once, but you can keep moving forward and progressing. And don't let, I guess, you know, like the fear of the unknown keep you from at least trying hard and trying new things and, you know, taking calls. Like, even for example, with the recruiters, I was, you know, hesitant to even accept their messages on LinkedIn, but I was like, you know what, why not? Let's see. Public accounting was great, and it was a grind and super hard work. But this led me to an amazing opportunity just because I was kind of open and again, embraced the unknown, and it kind of did my time in that way. Yeah.
You said you were doing some traveling around Europe. Where are you going? So hopefully someplace warm, beaches, something like that.
Oh, certainly. You know, I'm always traveling, which is amazing and is an amazing byproduct of being, I guess, living internationally. But yeah, so most of July, after I fly back from the US, I'll be in Italy. So yeah, I'll be in Rome. I studied in Florence. I've traveled a bit of Italy, but it's one of those you can always go back to. And I haven't really traveled much of South Italy. So I'll be going, I haven't decided between Rome and Sicily, but I know that I'll be in Sicily for about 2 weeks.
Okay.
A car, and I have friends coming, and we're renting a big Airbnb. We're working remote most of the time there, but I am taking some time off in Rome because some of my family's coming back with me. And yeah, I'm excited for some pasta. and
yeah,
and sure. Hopefully some beach time, but I heard it's very warm in there. So,
well, I get all these ads, you can buy a little flat in Sicily for like €1, it looks like. So
I know every time I travel, I'm looking up and I'm like, how can I make this work?
I think they have these towns where the younger generations are moving to cities, so they will just,
yeah,
you know, really, I think you have to put quite a bit of money it's going to be warm in Sicily in July.
It will, but it will be basically the entire year's worth of sun for me. So, yeah.
Soak it up while you're kidding.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm glad. Yeah. Glad you need to do it. I'm glad. It's amazing because you say you're going to work remotely, right?
Yep.
Remotely while checking different stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been nice. And my company actually does, obviously COVID kind of disrupted everything, but July is a pure work remote month. So it's, you know, you go anywhere, no questions asked. You just have to kind of flex your hours a bit. So, I'm taking advantage of that. And then most weekends I try to get away and travel with, whether it's within England or, you know, quick flights, you can fly Ryanair for better or worse, around, and I've been able to check out a lot of Europe, which is always fun.
Now, you've already covered some of this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Advice to the freshly minted Delta graduates, and if it's some of the stuff we talked about around keys to success, that's fine as well. But what would you tell our students coming up?
Yeah, so... there's a lot to that as well. I do think it kind of resonates to what I was saying before, but you're not going to know everything. So try to absorb as much as possible from day one, and don't think that, you know, your first job is going to be your only job. Think of it as an opportunity to progress. You know, maybe you identify your long-term goals and where you want to be eventually. And I still do that now. But I do think, you know, when you're young and you're just graduating, everything seems like such a big decision, and it is, but, you know, kind of embracing that and again, kind of acting like a sponge and taking everything you possibly can in is huge. And then also leaning on your ZAG network. Some of my closest friends are still Gonzaga alum, and they're going through the same things as you, and just having that open dialogue with, you know, your job and expectations and team dynamics is huge. Cause you don't really know anything, you know, Gonzaga is a great education, but once you get into the real world, I mean, the learning curve is straight up there as well. And so being able to hear different perspectives from your friends and family, especially those who are just graduating too, helped me a lot kind of formulate my perspective and thoughts and where I wanted to take my career as well.
Awesome. Appreciate you being on the pod. Good to see you.
Yeah, it was great seeing you. And I cannot wait to hear about your Florence adventures. Yeah. And if you are ever in London, please reach out to me. I'll give you all the recs.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Have a good time in Spokane. And
we'll do.
See you.
All right. Have a great day.
Cheers.
Bye.
This podcast has been a production of the Gonzaga University School of Business. It was edited by yours truly, Margie Allgaard. Go forth and set the world on fire. And go Zags!